Satam prasangan mama virya samvidho. Bhavanti ritkarna rasayana katha. Tajoshalada svapavarga vartmani. Shradharatir bhaktir anukramishyati. Satam of pure devotees. Prasangat, through the association. Mama, my. Virya, wonderful activities. Samvidaha, by discussion of. Bhavanti, become. Rit, to the heart. Karshna, to the ear. Rasa ayana, pleasing. Kata, the stories. Tat, of that. Joshanat, by cultivation. Ashu, quickly. Appavarga, of liberation. Vartmani, on the path. Shraddha, firm faith. Rattihi, attraction. Bhaktihi, devotion. Anukramishyati, will follow in order. Translation: in the association of pure devotees, discussion of the pastimes and activities of the Supreme Personality of Godhead is very pleasing and satisfying to the ear and to heart. By cultivating such knowledge, one gradually becomes advanced on the path of liberation, and thereafter he is freed, and his attraction becomes fixed. Then devotional, real devotion and devotional service begin. Wow. Until then, it hasn't begun, huh? So before I read the purport, I'm going to do two other things. One is, refer back to Friday evening and Saturday morning, this morning. The topic was How Bhakti Begins Part 1 and How Bhakti Begins Part 2, and this is Part 3, How Bhakti Begins. And Part 1 was reference to Rupa Goswami's instructions to Rupa Goswami in Chaitanya Charitamrita, where Bhakti Lata Bija, I'm not going to do too much review, but one comes to become a very bhagyavan, very fortunate person, by receiving the bija of Bhakti Lata, the seed of the creeper of devotion, from by the mercy of both Guru and Krishna. Krishna arranges for that by his mercy. And then the receiver of that seed is advised by Lord Chaitanya to sow the seed like a gardener and water the seed by the watering process of hearing and chanting, and the seed will sprout and so forth. So how it begins. Then this morning we discussed Lord Chaitanya's instructions to Sanatan Goswami, starting with verse 83, and I'm going to read that again, written in Bengali. Krishna Bhakti Janma Mulahaya, Janma Krishna bhakti janma mula. So the root of the beginning of Krishna bhakti is sadhusanga. Krishna prema janne teho puna mukhya anga. The root cause of devotional service to Lord Krishna is association with advanced devotees. Even when one's dormant love for Krishna awakens, association with devotees is still most essential. So in the beginning, in the end, and everywhere in between, sadhusanga is necessary. So that's Lord Chaitanya's statement, how bhakti begins. Root cause is the association of devotees. And then Lord Chaitanya refers to three verses. One of them we discussed this morning. Muchukunda, stating how his devotional service began, and it began by his association with Gargamuni, and it awakened in him this seed, or the attraction for Krishna, who he then prayed to, and Krishna came. He became a pure devotee through prayer, hearing and association and prayer. Krishna came because he's Bhakta Vatsala and took away his affinity for matter, his, you know, I want to be a king program. Then another verse, the one that's, the next verse is from the 11th canto, which we'll discuss part 4 tomorrow morning. And this is the third verse Lord Chaitanya discusses from Srimad Bhagavatam, this verse here. Satam prasangam avavirya samvido. Those of you that are here from Seattle, you remember very well, not this past Thanksgiving, but the one before that, the Sadhu Sangastaka, which is the 8 prayers taken from chapter 25. This is one of those 8 prayers where we elaborately discuss this topic. Now, this is a mini discussion of the same topic, but directly fitting it into how does bhakti begin? Through sadhu sangha. So, Lord Chaitanya made his statement, and he's now supporting it through scripture. Even he's the personality of Godhead, he does that, so we should also do that. We make statements, and in devotional circles, we support with scripture. Now, I find it interesting in one sense that he's taking this verse, which is amongst these sadhusangastaka verses, exceptionally important, but he, going back to text 20, so I said I was going to do two things. One is reference to Chaitanya Charitamrita, Sanatan Goswami's being instructed by Lord Chaitanya. The other is the verses preceding this verse. Because starting with text 20, the verse reads, the wise know that bad association is strong bondage for the soul. Association with devotees, however, opens the door to liberation. And in Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur's commentary, he says, the cause of bhakti is association with devotees, which is also said here. But this is a little bit more advanced, and this is the beginning. Of course, the beginning and the more advanced, the same principle holds. That's what Lord Chaitanya said. So whether we're at this stage or this stage or this stage or whatever the stage, association with devotees is very important. So then, who's a devotee? And what does association with devotees mean? Because here we are. You're just physically proximate. So that's what we do. We just sit close to one another. That's nice. And then what do you do? So now first is, who is a devotee? So that's text 21. Um, according to Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur's commentary, the next four verses, so 21, 22, 23, and 24, before this one, 25, next four verses are describing the lakshana, or the characteristics of a devotee. And 21 is describing marginal characteristics or secondary characteristics, and then 22 is the swarup lakshana or principal characteristics. So they are titikshava, like Balaram was describing this morning, tolerant, karunika, merciful, without enemies, sauhrada, sarva dehinam, friendly towards all, ajata shatra, they're straightforward in all of their dealings, sadhava, sadhavushanam, very simple. In Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur's essay, there's a whole book, which at one time was a talk. You know how in academia, those of you that have mixed with academia a little bit, you give a paper. You don't just stand in front of an audience and say blah, blah. You write a critical, to be critiqued by others, paper, and then you present it. Right, those of you that know academia? So that's what he did. He was asked to speak on a topic, so he prepared a paper. Vaishnavism and Brahmanism, without all the history. When he's describing a Brahmana, he indicates that the foremost, number one quality of a Brahmana is they're straightforward. They're simple. They're not duplicitous. They're straight. And, you know, it gives many examples. The classic example is when the young boy wanted to become a disciple of, or a student of Gotama, he came to Gotama and said, I'd like to become your disciple. He said, very well. What is your gotra? And he said, I don't know. He said, well, go ask your mother. And his mother said, sorry to tell you, but I don't know who your father is, because I've been with so many men, I don't even know who your father is. So, but you can tell Gotama that, what was his name again? Loud? Satyakama Jambala. My name is Jambala. So you, Satyakama Jambala. So he went back and told everything exactly as he heard. My mother doesn't know who my father is, but she said to say, my name is Satyakama Jambala. I said, very well, I accept you as a disciple. Because only one who is straightforward can tell such a truth. That's the real quality, not what your birth is, but your quality. So I accept you as a disciple. So Bhaktisiddhanta refers to that as the primary qualification of a brahmana. Is that what that little exchange shows? Straightforward, non-duplicitous. And duplicity is abounds in material dealings, and brahmanas don't indulge in that. So there's 20 is avoid unwholesome association, take association of sadhus. Who's a sadhu? Here's the secondary characteristics. And then primary characteristic is in text 22. Mayi ananya bhavena bhaktim kurvanti ye dridham. So this is commentary. The principal characteristic is exclusive association in Krishna. So with that injunction, it means not association or not engaging in worship of others, but exclusive shelter. And in the commentary, he refers to Mam Ekam Sharanam, right? 1866. Sarvadharmam Parityaja Mam Ekam Sharanam. So same as Mayi Ananya Bhavena. Krishna is the only object, they give up others. Matkrite. And then, interesting, Chaktva Karmanas, Chakta Swajana Bandhava, which means they give up other dharmas, other karmas, and Swajana. So you know what that means. Your family and friends, and you'll see you later. To that, he, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, quotes Vishnu saying to Durvasa Muni in the 9th canto, chapter 4, since pure devotees give up their homes, wives, children, relatives, riches, and even their lives simply to serve me without any desire for material improvement in this life or in the next, how can I give up such a devotee at any time? Now please note that Maharaj Ambarish had a wife and had riches and had everything. He had all these things that it says one gives up. And then on that basis, Lord Vishnu says, how can I, they've given up all those things, how can I ever abandon them? So it doesn't necessarily mean, although it certainly can mean, depending upon one's suitable nature, just like Luke described in his presentation this morning about Narottam Das Thakur, who, when he wanted to go and leave home, and his parents tried to stop him. You recall what he described. Narottam wanted to just devote himself exclusively. He was a lifelong renunciate, as was Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. But Ambarish Maharaj wasn't, and Bhaktivinoda Thakur wasn't. It's not like when he read Srimad Bhagavatam, oh, I guess I've got to leave my family, see you later. That's not what it means. Nor is that what it means for Arjuna. So what it means is desire for material improvement in this life or the next in those categories, or affinity for matter, or asat Krishna. The position of Ambarish Maharaj, while he had all those things, they were meaningless to him. He saw them as no more valuable than a pebble on the street. We don't become very excited about a pebble on the street. Someone may become very excited about their riches, or their position, or their throne, like Mochakunda was describing to Krishna, chasing after happiness in worldly matters. And one can do a similar thing in the house of bhakti, and it's not what bhakti is. Or in the sangha of devotees, someone may be interested in position or fame or recognition or something or something. It's one of the categories of anarthas, in fact, that's described by Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur in Madhurya Kadambini. A little success in bhakti, and I do so because I want some recognition, and I get recognition or a title or position or some something. Not that. So that's what one is to give up. Mayi ananya bhavena bhaktim kurvanti ye dridham. We heard yesterday evening, Friday evening, about dridhavrata, something that devotees ask in a common way. How do I become very fixed in my determination? So through sadhusanga, and sadhusanga taken up properly, one can become very determined to strive to reach Krishna, strive for Shuddha Bhakti in all that I do, not just what I, you know, not just some part of what I do. In all of what I do, Shuddha Bhakti is my goal, my shelter, my attainment, my intention in life. Then after describing the principal characteristic, there's two more. What does such a person do? What does a sadhu do? Taking shelter of me, they recite and listen to pure stories. Mrishta katha. Not the other kind. They're not interested in Gramya katha or songs about stuff. Do, do, do. They're not interested in it. Woo, woo, woo. They're not interested in it. Even the musical composition may appear to be, you know, boop de boop. They're not interested in it. Popular music. Not interested in it. Why? Because Krishna is absent. Those kinds of katas. They are not afflicted by material miseries. And thus fully absorb their minds in me. Well, because their minds are absorbed in Krishna, they're not afflicted by material miseries, and they're detached from the material miseries because it doesn't accept that it, you know, it gives impetus to take deeper shelter of Krishna. They're not stressed by the circumstances that are abundantly stressful in material existence. Looking around the room, I can think of a number of persons who have recently experienced very stressful situations. And the ones I don't know about, just because I don't know about them, it's just the nature of the place. So, what to do? Sadhu Sangha, Krishna Katha, take shelter, genuine shelter. Yeah, but Maharaj, be practical. I got to deal with the avat part of things. Okay, fine. Deal with what comes before the avat. It'll help you deal with the avat. Those devotees are devoid of attachment for artha, dharma, kama, and moksha. You should desire their association. They destroy the fault of material association. Sangha dosha hara. Isn't this one of the, you know, the six and the six? Those of you that know nectar of devotion, nectar of instruction. Six things that destroy and six things that enhance bhakti. In both the destroy and enhance, there is something about association. Jana sangas chaloliam cha shadvir bhakti vinashati. So it's a whole other class to talk about what association with non-devotees means. Doesn't mean don't go to work and don't go to school. Yay! Rupa Goswami said, don't go to work. Don't go to school. Wait a minute, no. I'll go to, you go to school, but I won't go to work. No. You go to work and I won't go to school. But it's neither of them. It's the regular matters of dealings of courtesy, social grace. That's not what unwholesome association is. It's, you know, hearing their katha about, you know, what people talk about when it's lunchtime. I don't need to repeat it. And we just, you know, we're listening to Krishna katha or whatever, you know, whatever we're doing, or just being polite, but not participating in that sound vibration. That's what I do when I'm traveling. You know, they're doing their jibber jabber, and I'm completely absorbed in what I'm doing. I know it's jibber jabber, but I'm not like eavesdropping on the jibber jabber. Unless they're really loud. Then I ask them, you know, shh. He's a monk. They say that sometimes. Are you a monk? So now this verse. This is the verse where that Lord Chaitanya is referring to Sanatan Goswami in how bhakti begins and how it continues up to the stage of perfection. So here's Prabhupada's commentary. Let me just read a little bit from the previous one. Janasanga dosha. Janasanga dosha. That's a fault. It's little. So just diving lower. It's material possessiveness. It's not having things and you're supposed to give things up, like family members and your home and your job. And it's the material possessiveness sense. It's mine, which means it's meant for my enjoyment and I'm at the center and, you know, turf conscious. And get away from my turf kind of consciousness. So relieving one from that is the position of Krishna consciousness. A pure soul who is prepared to be freed from this material entanglement must, first of all, be free from the association of the three modes of material nature. This is the sadhu that's being spoken of in this verse, in other words, the qualities, the characteristics of. So one may not be there, but one should strive to get there, and then it also counts. You'll get there. You strive by right means. Those who are sadhava, or devotees engaged in Krishna consciousness in the transcendental service of the Lord, do not feel the contamination of material miseries. Whereas those who are not devotees in Krishna consciousness actually feel the miseries of material existence. One should therefore give up the association of materialistic persons and seek the association of persons engaged in Krishna consciousness, and by such association, he will benefit in spiritual advancement. So it was, I'm deliberately taking this message and speaking at it from different angles, so it hopefully, this is a lesson I learned from Bhurijan Prabhu. He's like a teacher for me in many ways. So, for example, I took a class that he was teaching in the Vrindavan Institute for Higher Education, and he had written a book that big, The Art of Teaching. Maybe some of you have seen it. And what he did for 30 days, because it was a 1 month course, every day he taught the same thing for 30 days. So it's still with me. And I can tell you what that thing is that he taught for 30 days right now. But it's a principle of, you know, from this angle, that angle, the other angle, role play, question, answer, lecture, examples, you know, this way, that way. The Art of Teaching course had a very simple message. So I'm trying to do the same thing here. Simple message. And that is, we want to advance, and I would like to see all of you advance in Krishna consciousness. There must be a very clear foundation understanding of how bhakti begins and how it gets nurtured. So there's a sambandhagyan is the foundation upon which the acting in the relationship with Krishna, devotional service, is based. The spiritual conception of what's what is the basis of acting in bhakti. If you don't have a spiritual conception, you just, you know, run down the street and acting in bhakti, you might do some things that are not really what bhakti is. Yes. So, and it goes on, as Prabhupada would say, and this is going on. So, this is some foundational, like, you know, make sure your compass is pointed in the right direction and you know what direction you're headed in before you start running. Like these questions that were coming about, you know, what should we tell people when we introduce them to chanting Hare Krishna? Because we don't want to make the offense of explaining the glories of the holy name to those who will offend the holy name. It's an offense for us to do that. So chant and be happy, or chant to become free from material distress. So here's the information on how to become free from material distress. Like I was describing in the morning, as an example of Sambandh again, how to help people who are grieving, undergoing material distress. You know, in our assembly, there's some medical doctors, and they're dealing with people who are in a lot of pain. And, you know, and they're relatives of those people who are in grieving their pain. My relative is my friend, my loved one, my whatever it is. They're experiencing grief, and then maybe death, and then the loss of that loved one. So, and we may not be medical practitioners, but in our role as devotees, it's always going to be something that we have to deal with. So we need to be properly grounded in Sambandh again, see the spiritual reality, not like, oh, don't worry, you're not their body, and get out of Maya, Prabhu. But, you know, from the heart position, be fixed in the spiritual conception, so that super soul can guide you according to your nature of extending care to others. How to do that in a way that's coming from the heart position, that's uplifting, without you getting caught up in, you know, the sadness of the situation and owning the sadness, because that can happen if one isn't properly situated. So the process of bhakti, when properly situated, the foundation of a spiritual conception, allows one to be exposed to the miseries of material existence without being afflicted by them. One can be, you tolerate in one standard, but you rise above them in another standard, and you're not oblivious to them, but not affected by them in the higher standard. And just two Prabhupada stories. I remember sitting with Prabhupada in his room in Vrindavan, and it was just like having a friendly discussion, and he held up his body and just turned his body like this, like it was, you know, an object. Said, this body's getting old and wrinkled and, you know, no longer useful. Just throw it away and get another one. With like, with detachment. And it wasn't cute, it was deep detachment. Then another time, I've narrated this many times, it was very painful to see it, where he sits, those of you who have been to his room, Prabhupada's quarters in Vrindavan, you know there's a desk where devotees go in and chant japa sometimes in the early morning hours. A very fond activity to do, especially if you're in a man's body, because there's hardly room for women. Anyway, Prabhupada was attending a gathering, you know, a room gathering, and then he finished and he stood up, and as he was walking to go outside of the reception room where he was sitting to his room, somebody spilled some water on the marble floor, and his foot hit the water, and his foot slipped on the floor and twisted his ankle, and he fortunately caught himself on the like a fireplace, like a little marble piece. So he caught himself, and oh, you know, the person who spilled the water, I'm sure, felt really terrible. And Prabhupada's foot immediately swelled up. And I don't recall what happened. I think I just blocked it out. You know, how he expressed himself for what had been done. But he immediately called for some poultice, some leaves and some this herb and that herb, and with his own mortar and pestle, mashed it up and made a poultice and put it around with leaves and string. That was the bandage. So the swelling would go down. He knew exactly what to do. But he was for sure in pain, but he was detached from the pain. He wasn't exhibiting any indication of the pain that he was experiencing. Or Harivilas told me, not Harivilas, Harisori told me that I was having lunch with Harisori one day during our lunch break at our GBC meeting, and I like Harisori a lot, so we just sat and said, I heard that your health is not so good. He said, yeah, it's not been so good. What's the problem? I have a kidney problem. And immediately, you know, it hit his Prabhupada button. So he started speaking about Prabhupada's kidney problems. I didn't know what he then described. Prabhupada had one kidney that didn't work at all and one kidney that half worked. For those of you that are medical doctors, you know what that means. There was toxins in his body like anything, and it was painful. And it's one of the reasons why he had massage, was to help, anyway, with help get toxins out of the tissue and eliminate them from his body. So Harisori then went on to say, for all that inconvenience and medical problem that he was experiencing, only, you know, devotees generally didn't know that, but Prabhupada was in a lot of pain. But he never really responded to that pain. He just went on. He tolerated it. He did some medicine things, and he just went on. Except he said there were two nights that he recounted. One night it was like 1 o'clock in the morning, and Prabhupada rang the buzzer on his desk. Harisori woke up and went into pay obeisances, and Prabhupada had his chadar over his head. His whole body was shivering. And he said, I can't translate. I'm in so much pain, I can't translate. And he was upset, not by the pain, but that he couldn't translate. And they said it happened twice. And otherwise, no indication at all. Then another time, Prabhupada had a abscess, like an infection in his tooth, and his whole cheek was swollen out. And the devotee said, Prabhupada, let us take you to a dentist. No, just give me some cloves. So he put cloves in his mouth and just went on like it wasn't an abscess. I'm not advocating that we don't go to dentists. I'm just indicating the threshold of what Prabhupada did. He just, his ability to tolerate it's the miseries of material existence. And then some days later, they were serving prasad, and Prabhupada reached into his mouth, pulled out the tooth, handed it to Harisori, said, here, you can keep this, and went on eating. His consciousness was on another platform. It wasn't that he wasn't aware, the abscess or the twisted ankle or his, you know, the toxins in his body from his kidneys weren't working. But his consciousness was so fixed. I mean, so many things. How did he keep the schedule that he kept? I was thinking to share this. Turned 65. Big deal. When Prabhupada came to America, he was 70. And the schedule he kept, as one gets older, one realizes lots of things. And sharing this with some God brothers of late, it's amazing not only what Prabhupada did, but at his age, he just like was rocket fueled, or more than rocket fueled. He was transcendentally propelled. How little he slept, and how, you know, he again, the Harisori was sharing that Prabhupada said, "I've conquered sleep. the animal propensities. This is towards the end when he stopped eating, sleeping, mating, and defending. So I've stopped the three. I'm just now finishing eating. No mating. Conquered sleep. He slept very little. No defending. Now it's just eating. So I'm going to stop eating too. Knowing that by so doing he couldn't live. But it was a decision he made, given his medical condition, and determined to show his disciples by example transcendental, how to depart from this world with grace and not hooked up to machines and all of that kind of program. So text 24 is going beyond the miseries of material existence by transcendental consciousness. And when transcendental consciousness is awakened, when one becomes such a personality as is described in these verses, the influence of material miseries subsides. It's not like the waves stop, but you're above the waves, like that. And that can be accomplished by association with devotees. One should therefore give up the association of materialistic persons and seek the association of persons engaged in Krishna consciousness, and by such association, he will benefit in spiritual advancement. You know, from the right ground, one can then move in the process of bhakti. By their words and instructions, he'll be able to cut off his attachment to material existence. So it's something we have to do, but it's also something we have to receive before we do. It's receiving, eagerly receiving quality association like these four verses described. So now, that was just a warm-up. Now comes the verse. Again, the translation of this Satam Prasangan verse. In the association of pure devotees, discussion of the pastimes and activities of the Supreme Personality of Godhead is very pleasing and satisfying to the ear and the heart. By cultivating such knowledge, one gradually becomes advanced on the path of liberation, and thereafter he is freed, and his attraction becomes fixed. Then real devotion and devotional service begin. Phew. Purport. The process of advancing in Krishna consciousness and devotional service is described here. The first point is that one must seek the association of persons who are Krishna conscious and who engage in devotional service. Without such association, one cannot make advancement. Simply by theoretical knowledge or study, one cannot make any appreciable advancement. One must give up the association of materialistic persons and seek the association of devotees, because without the association of devotees, one cannot understand the activities of the Supreme Lord. These three sentences in a row. Generally, people are convinced of the impersonal feature of the Absolute Truth. So one must go beyond that with some other text. Service or devotion cannot be offered to anything impersonal. Service must be offered to a person. Non-devotees cannot appreciate Krishna consciousness by reading the Srimad Bhagavatam or any other Vedic literature wherein the activities of the Lord are described. They think that these activities are fictional, manufactured stories, because spiritual life is not explained to them in the proper mood. To understand the personal activities of the Lord, one has to seek the association of devotees. And by such association, when one contemplates and tries to understand the transcendental activities of the Lord, the path to liberation is open and he is freed. In Sri Brahma Samhita, there's a series of verses 32. The Govinda prayers begin with text 29, 30, 31. And then 32 through 35, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur says, Brahma composed these four verses, 32 through 35, to address those doubtful persons who hear the activities of Krishna and think, how is this possible? You know, the doubting, using the Dr. Frog, looking at Krishna through the lens of, I can't do that, so how could he do that? It must be fiction. So to dispel that doubt, Brahma speaks those four verses. And it's this mamavirya, mamavirya, his glories. So that we can understand, like this, the one that we sing, Angani yasya sakalendriya vrittimanti, is one of those. He's omnipotent. By any one of his senses, he can do anything the other senses can do. Etc. So how is one going to understand that? Only through the association of devotees, and not otherwise. We require since it's bhakti that dissolves false ego, and not otherwise. Bhakti is received through the association of devotees, and otherwise our false ego is going to filter all that stuff out. We won't understand Krishna. Naham prakasha sarvasya yogamaya samavrata mudhoyam nabijanati. Krishna doesn't present himself as he is before the non-devotee. They won't understand him. They see something else. Even they read Srimad Bhagavatam. Like a nice leela. This is Saturday night, so a little story. From Chaitanya Charitamrita. The description of Devananda Pandit. Devananda Pandit was a scholar. Before Lord Chaitanya performed his pastimes as a devotee, Devananda Pandit was reciting Srimad Bhagavatam. He lived in Kulia, which is now the city of Navadvip. And big scholar, spoke very nicely. Many people came to listen. And he spoke on Bhagavatam, but he rendered ridiculous meanings from it. But just by hearing the verses, one day Srivas Pandit was passing by and heard Srimad Bhagavatam. So he came and sat in the assembly, quietly. And hearing the verses of the Bhagavatam, even from such a person, he felt ecstatic because it was Shukadeva Goswami describing the glories of Krishna. And he went into a state of ecstasy, rolling on the ground and trembling. And the guards who were looking after the program thought, this is a crazy fellow, and they picked him up and tossed him out. Devananda Pandit saw it and didn't do anything. But Chivas wasn't disturbed. He went back to his home and continued on in his devotional service. But Lord Chaitanya knew, because he's omniscient, and he scolded Devananda Pandit. This is when he was still a scholar, not in his devotee pastime, devotee leela. And he blasted him for yet being a nonsense and speaking of that which he was not qualified. But Lord Chaitanya would confront everybody, so he just, this Nimai Pandit is a proud little scholar and brushed it off. Later, so this is the unqualified person getting the association of a devotee. The devotee in this case was Vikreshwar Pandit. And Vikreshwar Pandit was one time visiting in Kulia, and there was a kirtan, and he was dancing. But when he danced, he didn't dance like an ordinary person dances. He was dancing in ecstatic love of God, and leaping in the air and exhibiting symptoms of ecstasy. So this was, even anywhere, This would happen. So the crowd formed. So Devananda Pandit happened to pass by and saw the ecstasy of love of God that Vrikeshwara Pandit was exhibiting, and with his arms he helped hold the crowd back so that Vrikeshwara Pandit can continue dancing without everybody crowding in. And then later he invited Vrikeshwara Pandit to come to his home, and he, as a brahmana, he offered him a meal and fed him and heard Krishna Katha from him. And when he heard Krishna Katha from him, it was, wow. So he sought his association further and further and further and further. And by the association of Vrikeshwara Pandit, he got the seed of bhakti. And then later when Lord Chaitanya came back to Kumya, Devananda Pandit came and begged for forgiveness for what he had done. And Lord Chaitanya said, you have to go to Srivas Pandit. You're a big offender. You've offended a pure devotee. And you have to correct that by going to him and begging for his forgiveness. But by the mercy of Vrikeshwara Pandit, he got to that position. So the unqualified person can become qualified by association with a qualified person. And we're all unqualified. Totally. What's our qualification? We're unqualified. And therefore we're fit candidates for being recipients of Lord Chaitanya's mercy. That's our qualification. That he is merciful. And his associates are, he's supposed to be, also merciful. Well, his associates are merciful, and we're trying to become suitable associates and be suitably merciful. Just like verse 22 describes, or the characteristics of a devotee. And then Prabhupada's purport goes on. One who has firm faith. Remember that one? Shraddha we've been discussing? One who has firm faith in the Supreme Personality, Godhead, becomes fixed. And his attraction for association with the Lord and the devotees increases. Last sentence. Association with devotees means association with the Lord, the devotees who make this association develop the consciousness for rendering service to the Lord. And then, being situated in the transcendental position of devotional service, he gradually becomes perfect. So this is Lord Chaitanya's scriptural reference for his statement that of how bhakti begins, and even in the advanced stages, the same principles apply. It's receiving the seed of faith and nurturing that seed of faith, which is having conviction in the bhakti scriptures, devotional teachings, and the goal that those devotional teachings will take one to, and that means also then the teachers of those teachings. And then one can advance. And when that advancement does take place, there are sequential stages. Shraddha, so this is now Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur's commentary on the Shraddha. This is the stage of advanced devotion, or the stage of Nishtha, beyond Anarjanavritti. Is Nishtha, steady. There may be some residual, steady means there may be some residual, but affinity or impurities of heart, but not sufficient, because bhakti is so strong it overpowers them. They will not manifest. That's the stage of Nishtha. And then Rati, which is Bhava stage, and then Bhaktir is prema, because devotion is pure. That's what we learn from Rupa Goswami. Devotion is without anyavilash, without other desires. It's completely pure. Or cultivating that is also the immature stage of that which is mature. So that to say, and then bhakti begins, means bhava bhakti and prema bhakti become manifest. That's what bhakti, that's what the fruit of bhakti. That's what bhakti is. So the tree bears the fruit, but then the fruit is the fruit of bhakti. The bhakti lata bij that one receives by the mercy of Guru and Krishna. Isn't it nice? It's nice. Any discussion on this nice topic? Paramarupa? Here's the microphone.
This is from the morning's discussion. On that
this
verse.
Morning's discussion?
Yes, Guru Maharaj. Where we were studying the verse where the cause and effect relationship was reversed.
Yes. Like, yes.
The specific statement was that, like, coming from the verse, like, when the material life is finished, then...
One gets the association of devotees,
but we are understanding that when one gets the association of devotees, then one's material life is finished. So yes. I was wondering that statement, I mean, both are supposed to be true because one is coming from the Srimad Bhagavatam and another is coming from the realized heart. So both statements have to be true. So I was wondering whether we can understand in this way that that when we find that the material life of a devotee is finished, we should know that that person must have contacted
yes.
a pure devotee.
Yes.
Okay.
Confirmed.
Okay.
In fact, in Jiva Goswami's commentary, he says just that. And then he says, there's another understanding, and that's this reversed. But what you said is what he says first.
Okay.
Which is similarly to what Jai Jagannath said. Atmani Vedana, you can ask the same question you asked this morning?
No, different.
Okay.
Sorry.
I suggest you have a chat with Jai Jagannath about that thing this morning.
Okay.
And you may end up, you know, agreeing to disagree, but, you know, I think you may find you do agree.
Oh, it's probably I was just misunderstanding.
No, it's probably you have a very logical mind.
Okay.
And this is... Anyway, have a discussion with him.
Okay, thank you.
I will. And I like your logical mind is good. It's okay. It's necessary. And he's not intimidated by it. He likes such discussions, in fact.
Okay.
Go ahead.
So it was going back toward, a little more towards the beginning of your class on, you were speaking of Srila Prabhupada's tolerance. And I just had a question about what a pure devotee experiences. The word tolerate to me entails that one may have the feeling, one may feel pleasure, one may feel pain, but it doesn't impede one's plans to do what one's going to do. So a pure devotee is he merely tolerating the pain that he does experience, or at a certain stage does he not even feel the pain?
I had this very wonderful discussion with Bhakta Rupa Prabhu, specific to the context was different. Anyway, both positions can be taken. It's not like it's got to be this one, and your logical mind can't accommodate that. It's got to be this one or that one. It can't be both are right. Come on, Maharaj. Let's be logical. One can look at it either way. I was taking the position in my discussion with Bhakta Rupa that a transcendentalist is transcendental. They're not feeling the impulse of, this specifically was that verse of, when I think of sex life, I spit at the thought. And that the Vaishnava is speaking like he's one of us, because a person in such a position, that lust has become transformed to love. That's their qualification. So they don't have it. But they're speaking as if they're one of us, and, you know, this bit of the thought. And he's saying, no, no. As long as one is embodied, you know, the impulses are going to be there. You know, one can feel the pain. But that, you know, they're completely transcendental to it. It's like, is it nishta or is it prema? So my position was, in prema, it's prema. There's no lust in the heart of the gopis. There's no lust in the heart of anyone that's in, or lust, anger, you know, the foibles. Now, this is not the same as pain, but it's, you know, the limitations of material contamination. Don't touch one who is a pure devotee on such a platform. But then there is, you know, then there's, you know, it's nice. It's a nice subject. The Brahma-Bhuta stage. You know, Brahma-Bhuta, Prasanatma, Nasochati, Nakangsati, Samak. So there's another one where Brahma-Bhuta is also described in 14:26. Mam chayo vyabhicharena bhakti yogena sevate saganan samatityaitan brahmabhuyaya kalpate. When it once attains the level of Brahman. So in Bhaktivinoda Thakur's commentary on that verse, he describes there's two. That this Brahma-Bhuta stage, where there's no material affinity and there's some. And yet there's a term for each. Sarupgata and Vastugata. And there are those that, an example is from Brahma Samhita, as Lord Brahma, after all of the Brahma Samhita prayers, that go through these beautiful Govinda prayers, he still wants to create a universe. He still has some affinity for matter, although it's invested him by the personality of Godhead. It's not a, you know, no-no, but he still has some affinity to do that. And there's other examples without going too far into it. And then there's those that have no affinity. So on the Brahma-Bhuta platform, one can make an argument that says they feel the pain, but they're above it. Another says they don't even feel the pain. So it's not that the person who's Krishna, Prabhupada would say like this, not that the person who's Krishna conscious becomes unconscious. They see everything in relation to Krishna. You know, it's asat. It's not me. So Prabhupada was aware that his leg was swollen. He knew what to do and he did it. He was, you know, he did the practical thing. And there was pain, you know, that he was feeling some pain, like extreme pain. And he couldn't translate. So he was experiencing pain, but transcendental to it.
I follow you, Maharaj, but it sounded to me like, in part of your response, it sounded like you were saying you feel it on the Nishta platform and at the Prema platform, you're aware of it, but you're unaffected by even the feeling. So
because consciousness is 100% absorbed.
But isn't that Srila Prabhupada there?
Well, you know, he was teaching us, wasn't he?
Okay.
Touché. Anyone else? Right up front here. Guess what? Here's the microphone. Oh.
In the verse it says that when one becomes fixed in attraction, then they're freed, and that's when the real devotion and the devotional service.
Yes.
Certainly I'm not there. And when I try to do some service, what is that kind of service?
What's your question? Don't say the whole thing, just the last part.
Well, certainly I'm not there where the verse talks about.
Yeah, I got
about,
that.
And when I attempt to do some service, what is that service termed as? When it is not real service?
It depends on the stage. It can be, you know, this one, that one. Shraddha, Bhajana Kriya, Narta, you know. Depends on the stage. This, and then devotional service begins. I explained, it's Bhava Bhakti and Prema Bhakti. That's my understanding, at least. Somebody else in the room may have a different understanding. It's that. It's the fruit. And then it's shuddha, unmixed. So what do you call it now, mixed? We're practicing. But it's not that practicing doesn't count. It counts. Krishna sees you're practicing. And you're cultivating and helping to establish your, reestablish your eternal relationship with Krishna. That's what you're doing. And then when it becomes matured, then the unmixed begins from the mixed. Okay? It still counts. It's bhakti. Back here. No, raise your hand, please.
Hare Krishna, Maharaj.
Hare Krishna.
Maharaj, in the beginning of the lecture, you were talking about secondary qualities and the primary qualities of a devotee.
Yeah.
So I wanted to ask, like, are these two independent of each other?
No.
In the sense that...
They're interdependent.
In the sense that, like, one of the primary qualities of exclusively worshipping Krishna. So, like, when we are staying in temple, when as a brahmachari or anything, we know that as per the rituals, we are following all the rituals in Krishna consciousness. We are not worshipping any other demigod or have any other desire like that. But still we don't see in our own lives the manifestation of the secondary qualities.
Manifestation of the secondary qualities?
Yeah, so it does it
mean... Be patient.
Sorry?
Be patient.
Okay. So does it mean that we can use that to judge whether we are properly executing Krishna consciousness?
Yes, but we also have to see more. How nicely are we doing in the primary category? Because when the primary is right, the secondary will come. I'll give a little example. I like this example. I was sharing this. Take the microphone from him, please. I was sharing this with my brother. I have a brother who is 9 years older than me. And his birthday is one day after mine. So, you know, we remember each other's birthday around birthday time. We have at least an annual conversation. So we had a really long annual conversation. I missed a conference call to have that conversation with him. It was really nice. And I was sharing with him this particular point, one of, among other things. Our father liked to... he was an outdoorsy person. He was an accountant, so that, you know, that's not outdoorsy stuff, but he really liked outdoorsy stuff, you know, gardening and golfing and, you know, sailing and swimming and outdoor stuff. So, skipping some detail, one of the things that he did, we would go to a place along Great Lakes and there were wild blueberries. We picked baskets and baskets and baskets and baskets of wild blueberries, and we went back and Mom made blueberry jam and blueberry pie and blueberry this and blueberry that, and, you know, blueberries coming out our ears. So then he got this nice idea that he, you know, we put some plants and fruit trees in our backyard because he had this really gigantic backyard. And I remember a little boy looking up at the peach tree saying, "Dad, when's it going to make peaches?" He said, "Be patient. Okay. Next year, where are the peaches?" And, you know, be patient. It's a peach tree. It's going to make peaches. Just have to be patient. It has to mature. Oh. Then one year, these little round things, little green things, and I was going, "Yay, peaches." But they didn't go beyond the little green things. Be patient. And we moved before it actually produced peaches, but I imagine it's like this, you know, humongous peach tree now with so many peaches. Because, you know, from the seed, the thing will grow. You just cultivate the seed properly. So do the swarup lakshana properly, and the tatastha lakshana, everything, the marginal secondary characteristics will follow. "He who strives by right means is assured of success," Krishna says. So make sure you're striving by right means. Make sure that the ground, you have a proper spiritual conception. so that you know that you're striving by right means and not think that you're striving by right means and actually heading in the wrong direction. Check on that one, and the secondary will come. And we can cultivate them behind the primary. That's another important point. Something else? Any from the ladies' side? We've got a lot of ladies here. Any from the ladies' side? Okay. Suja, you got to have a question. Come on. You have a question? No? Really? Okay.
Maharaj, you mentioned association of non-devotees should be avoided, and you gave examples. That does not mean that you stop going to work or the kids stop going to school. And then you also mentioned that when we go to work, not to get involved in the worldly-minded topics or whatever the people are talking around.
Yeah.
Focus on what we are doing, if it is not related to Krishna Katha.
Yeah.
Then how can we teach this to kids? Because nowadays when they go to school...
You set an example. That's how you teach to kids. That's my understanding of how parents can teach children, by example. And then you show by example, this is what we do. And, you know... Parenting is a wonderful subject. It can take a lifetime to talk about it. Is it Vaita Chandra here? No. He has a little conference, and they have a parenting discussion. And I'm sure this topic comes up in so many other. So, how to train children is. I said, the first is set an example, most important, because discerning children can understand the difference between example and precept. So an example is far more compelling than precept. Then another is explain why. And, you know, not just like lecture, but explain. If a part of explaining can be by asking questions. What's the consequence of this, and what's the consequence of that? And you've seen this, and go down the road, and what does that look like? What does it feel like when you see this? And when you go see that, what does it feel like? What does it look like? Now, which one would you like? And, you know, fortunately for you, Krishna has blessed you with a very wonderful spirit soul as a daughter, and she very clearly will understand the difference between this and that and choose the wholesome one. That's her nature. Some other children might not, and then it becomes more challenging. But the what I'm saying here is you're addressing the rational discerning faculty of a child, in, you know, different ages, there's different capacities of discerning, of intellect. That's what intelligence discerns or discriminates between this and that. So you profile the this and the profile the that. You show the example of the one that you want, but you, by discerning faculty, you take a look at this and that. And the reason that we do this and not that is here's the consequence, here's the outcome, and it's not pretty. So we don't like the outcome, although it may have it feels good, or the social pressure or something, the outcome isn't nice. So we like this one, and here's why. And then, you know, with scriptural example to support it, and, you know, it's part of what parents have to do, to use language that children can understand, not just to tell them, but, you know, help them, you know, search within themselves and determine for themselves, I want to do this instead of that because it works. When the right atmosphere is there in the home, and the good example is set, then and you treat, my language is, you treat the child like a young adult instead of just like a child. But, you know, so you allow the reasoning and discerning faculty to be exercised. so they can understand why. And once they understand why, so what do you feel? Then it's like their decision, and you're supporting that decision. And you, and so you're the supporter of a mature, thoughtful decision. Then there's other pressure to conform to social norms. But then the strength of one's own convictions and the nurturing atmosphere in the home, there's protection. And I will say another thing, you know, a relationship with spiritual master. I've had our young devotee children describe their feeling and being protected by knowing that they have a relationship with their spiritual master. And they don't want to act outside of that. It's the protection of love. And then, you know, the yabat stuff, you know, doesn't act. You know, whatever that might be. I know, but something. I'm curious, maybe I'm missing out, or whatever it is. All the other kids are doing it, or whatever it is. Protection through loving relationships. And there's multiple opportunities for loving relationships, especially when we make the right foundation of speaking again from this morning's discussion, proper sambandhagyan, proper foundation in spiritual conception. It's not impossible for a child to function with a spiritual conception and function responsive to love. They're both very powerful. That's what parenting responsibility is, to take that soul and bring them to that platform. So as a parent, one has to be on that platform. Then one can impart that to the dependent. There's no substitute for purity is another way of saying the same thing. Anything else? Okay, last one. Back here. Les Sabal, you have something you want to say? You're processing, okay. Okay.
Hare Krishna Maharaj.
Yes.
We hear that an all or nothing approach to spiritual life is bad. I mean,
can you hold the microphone a little further away? Thanks.
We hear that an all or nothing approach to life in general is not good.
It's not real?
It's not good.
Not good?
Yeah. When we go for an extreme, tendency is to bounce back. So in relation to that, in the lecture, during the day, you said you compared like-minded. When talking about like-minded association, you also said it could also be like-minded contamination.
Yes.
These two seem like extremes. I mean, sometimes it's like-minded association is
encouraged.
Encouraged, but at the same time,
one should be vigilant.
Yeah. And similarly, when it comes to association, I was talking to one of the devotees last week. And
I thought you had some particular situation in your mind. You're just talking around it.
I wanted it to be general. So
got your number. Go ahead.
So sometimes when we associate,
sometimes we associate,
or most of the times, especially in our organization, we associate as a group.
Sure, it's natural.
And
because that's our nature. We like association.
The con with that is all of us receive same kind of instructions.
Yes, it reinforces our stuff. Go ahead, keep going.
Whereas different devotees are at different levels.
And yeah.
They need different levels of instruction.
So where are we going with this?
Whereas So how can the same kind of instruction to different levels of people help, and how can that kind of association?
Right, well, it's complex. As you know, you're framing it. There's complexity accomplishing that. So, minimally, principle needs to be enunciated clearly. And then, this is like, say, speaking to children. Principle still needs to be clear, or speaking to a young adult, or speaking to an adult, or speaking to a, you know, highly educated person. The principles don't change. So you may use language that accommodates the skill of the individual, or the spiritual position of the individual, or like I was, making this example of being relevant and relatable to different audiences that are not yet devotees, and how to do that without, losing, whitewashing Krishna consciousness and becoming, hodgepodge or milk toast or something, no longer Krishna consciousness. So stay with principle and recognize audiences. But when you have a mixed audience, which is your question, it's part of the challenge of a speaker. Sometimes, not always, but sometimes, or I'd say even quite often, if you consciously and even explicitly focus on the beginners, it helps everybody. And sometimes one may speak on with higher language, like Bhaktisiddhanta did, and then depending upon if you're pure like Bhaktisiddhanta is, even if people don't understand the language, they experience the purification. I just got a letter today from someone who's in China listening to the Brahma Samhita classes from Seattle. And they can't understand everything. They're a translator. They can't understand everything. And then what to speak of Bhaktisiddhanta's language. But they experience the same thing I expressed during the seminar that I experienced in reading Bhaktisiddhanta's writings. I don't understand everything, but read it again and read it again. And by his association, I feel something elevated by his purity, although I may not understand everything. So sometimes when speaking to a mixed audience, the speaking is up here. Now, Bhaktisiddhanta speaking was always up here. But, at least personally, you have to take some decision, some inspiration, and then move with, who the audience is.
I'm asking the question more in terms of the audience.
I thought that's what you're asking, and that's what I'm trying to respond to. As a speaker, there's various stages of people in the audience. And one has to speak to address the audience. Whenever public speaking, I'm asking whoever's arranging the program, describe the audience to me, please. So I can relate to the audience and be relatable for the audience. But, sometimes it's here, and sometimes it's here, and sometimes it's here. And sometimes it's a little bit of different things. And, processing as a speaker, this is going to be more relatable to this part of the audience and less relatable to another part of the audience. And even sometimes I sometimes say, now I'm going to say something that's for the newer people. And now newer people, I'm going to say something that isn't going to be so relatable to you. Just hang tight here and then speak that. Depends. Through experience, one can get a sense of tuning into the audience and their needs, and are they with you, and like that. Okay, that was our last question. Thank you very much. Prabhupada Ki Jai.